providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And in those first two segments, boy, oh boy, we covered a lot of different markets with Rick Ben Senior. In these last two segments, we are chatting with Joe Mazumdar, editor over at Exploration Insights. And we are going to be focusing almost exclusively on the resource sector, mostly in terms of the stocks. And a lot starting off here with some of the developers and producers of precious metals and even down into some of the other commodities. Fact of the matter is, we've heard the argument, whether it's precious metals or base metals, whatever metal you want, that, look, metals prices are generally higher than they were many years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, a decade ago. And you would think that a lot of these companies should be benefiting share price-wise. Majors, they've done maybe a little bit better recently, but a lot of these developers, boy, oh boy, they really continue to struggle, and it seems like a lot of investors continue to turn away or at least ignore this sector. This ties in a lot with the inflation narrative, where inflation continues to pick up. We are recording this about halfway through the week. And look, we just got the inflation data of 7%. When inflation is higher, that does eat away at some of the margins of these producers. Joe, in a broad sense, what do you think matters for investors right now when they are looking at developers and producers in metals, understanding that inflation is still rising?
Yes, thanks for having me. Yeah, in terms of inflation being a central theme that, you know, was spoken about last year as being more transitory because of COVID and issues with the supply chain. Now that, you know, we're seeing, you know, 7% in the States, but we're seeing inflation in the Eurozone. We're seeing also, you know, inflation in China, but not to the same extent, if you believe the numbers, at about 2%. And even Japan, which was deflationary forever, is also seeing a modicum of inflation. So globally, you know, all large economies, everyone's seeing inflation. And so what that's doing to the prices is making people, you know, less positive about real rates. Real rates actually coming up, and then gold price might come down. And so that sentiment right now for the gold sector is negative. In terms of costs, what we're seeing is margins are contracting for gold companies. Like, we'd always say that the gold price still is good for producers because they have booked their reserves at much lower prices. Even for the developers, we're seeing scoping studies and technical reports that are coming out at prices $200 to $300 per ounce lower than spot price. But what we're also seeing is cost escalation, not only capital, but operating, that are squeezing the internal rates of return on the development projects and also the margins for producers. And that's a trend that is not positive for precious metal producers going into 2022.
Well, Joe, let's stick with the producers first, and then we can pivot to the developers. Some of the narrative has been that, hey, you know, with these high gold prices, you know, they're banking money, they should be out growing their projects, taking over other companies. But people also forget that their cost of labor is going up, their cost of their fuel is going up, the cost of cement and steel and everything else is going up. Do you think that's why the generalist investors are looking at the precious metal sector maybe with a different set of lenses and saying, hey, I could see your margins still being good, but trending downward. So therefore, maybe that's keeping a lid on the prices. Is that maybe a force that we're seeing in the marketplace as regards to the producing companies?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we can talk about the balance sheets, which are good. We can talk about the reserves, which are very conservative. But the issue is that if you were looking for margin expansion, that argument probably ended sometime around the third quarter of last year. And so I've been tracking margins for base metal producers and for precious metal producers. And for precious metal producers, the average margin of a number of companies that I was tracking was well over 50% back in the fourth quarter of 2020. Now those have sort of contracted to 45% in the third quarter of 21. But that doesn't include, you know, the sustaining capital, the increases, potentially development costs increases if they had any development projects that would hit them. Meanwhile, the nickel and the copper producers and the base metal producers, their margins on average have been going up from, you know, like about 30, 35% to about 40%. So their margins are expanding because the price of the products they're producing are going up higher than their own cost increases due to labor, due to energy, due to goods and services. And there was an interesting, like Bloomberg put out, like the components of the inflation, and it's everything. It's not like just this thing or that thing. It's goods and services, it's energy, it's labor. And labor was the thing that just has been coming out in the last couple of quarters. Labor is becoming more on the forefront with respect to the cost escalation, much tighter labor markets globally.
So, Joe, when you're looking at analyzing some of these companies, all of these developers, producers, they have economic studies out. They have a lot of data on their projects. But when you see any of these studies from 2, 3 years ago, can you trust any of the numbers right now?
Well, what we're dealing with now is that a study that's, let's say, stale and 2 to 3 years, you could just say, oh, hey, you know, they should see 15% cost increase, 20% cost increase. So you could do that over the capital number, the operating number, what have you, and put that into your discounted cash flow model. But what we're also seeing is changes in scope. And so a scoping change is different, where you're not even building to the feasibility plan or the technical report. You're building a completely different project, which has its own increases as well. And that might be because the old report was in 2018. They've done more work and optimized it, and suddenly they're going to do something completely different. So overall, just basic is when you are looking at development companies, look at the date of the technical report, knowing that most of the quotes and the estimates driving their cost estimates might be even 6 months to a year before the actual published date of the report. So you got a bit of a lag there as well. And most of the inflation that we've seen has been happening in the last 2 to 3 quarters. So that's where we're seeing a lot of it happen. So if they've already got a lot of the long lead items already bought, purchased, you know, they're probably fine, but then they're still exposed to the labor costs if it's not a fixed contract. And now it looks like a lot of these contractors and builders are trying to avoid the fixed contracts so they don't eat the inflation. So now both parties are exposed to it. So those are the sort of things you got to look at. But coming back, what we're also looking at is if you're looking for a gold development project, you know, their ability to pay back that higher capital and generate better IRR is challenged in this gold price environment plus the escalating costs. So that's a bit of a challenge. If you're producing base metals or something else, you still have the potential that the commodity you're actually producing will might go up higher than your costs increase. So you might still be able to expand your margin, and you might still be able to, you know, generate higher IRRs. Because we got to think right now is that we still have permitting issues. There's still geopolitical issues globally. Like Chile's got a new left-wing president. Peru has had one for a while. Ecuador, you know, still has its issues. And it's not that easy to permit in many states, ignoring Nevada. And so all of that put pressure on actually generating a development project. So the few that actually get built or permitted, there's not that many of them. And so people will look at that and say, well, let's build this. But it's more problematic, I would say, for precious metal companies right now that are building those sort of assets than for base metal companies that or any other kind of metal. Because right now, as you pointed out originally, that a lot of these commodity prices have come up. And that's what's driving inflation. You know, but that's not, if you're producing gold, that's not what driving inflation. That's a different sort of commodity than something like copper, nickel, and what have you.
Joe, that's an interesting distinction because you're right. If you're a base metals company and your base metal is going up in tandem with everything else, then you're not feeling the brunt of the inflationary pressures and cost inputs as much as a precious metals company would be. But you brought up an interesting point there about the scoping changes. Sometimes companies are having to do midstream, and maybe they've got to adjust, you know, the back end of their mill. Maybe they've got to put in a different decline. Maybe they've got to adjust where their tailings pit was. There's times where they're moving on the fly. And when they're doing these scoping changes, it's at a lot different price than the market was expecting because the market wasn't expecting it and it wasn't part of the plan. So how should investors navigate, and how should even companies navigate, the inevitable changes that are going to come up in a mining company's plan?
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, trying not to surprise the market is good. So if you already see cost inflation, you're already projecting a scoping change, basically let people know. But the problem is some analysts don't embed that in their plan right away, and they wait for something more formal before they do anything. Like Arrow Copper has been tracking down after they had a, you know, significant capital increase on their copper project in Brazil. And basically, I mean, their big scoping change was changing the diameter of the 1.5 kilometer shaft that they were building. I think that was like they were going to build it to a certain diameter, but then they found out that that diameter of 4.2 meters needed to be like 6.3 meters, such that when they got down to the bottom, they could still keep going because they hit, you know, interesting results deeper than they were thinking that they would hit. And so that was a positive in terms of an exploration discovery, but a negative in terms of capital, because suddenly the shaft between cost inflation and scoping change doubled from $65 million to $130 million. You know, so they might have told the street, hey, it looks like we need a higher diameter shaft, but then the analysts may not have known, you know, what does that look like? Is that doubling the cost? Is that 30% increase? What is it? So they would all sit back and wait for that. And unfortunately, you know, it wasn't embedded in their prices. And so the share price, took a big hit because it was like it was unknown. And so that same similar sort of thing happened with Argonaut and Magino in terms of what people had modeled and what ended up happening. Pure Gold's another example of that. We've seen several examples of that with development companies changing on the fly and at the same time getting hit by cost inflation. And when you're not producing any cash, that's even more of a problem because you can run out of money and then you'd have to go to the equity markets and nobody wants to give you any money. So that is a risk right now.
So Joe, how do you broadly look at these developers or even producers from an investment angle? Because one of the, I guess, bullish comments you could make is that if we do start to see a turn, especially in precious metals, or even with the base metals that have done pretty well, look, investors, the large investors should get into these larger companies first, and that can provide the bump higher. Some of the base metal companies, they're already doing quite well. The odd precious metals company producer is doing quite well, but a lot of these developers have really struggled. Do you think a bottom is near, and how do you view them as investments?
Well, the thing is about when you do a development company that's non-cash flowing and they're building a project, you got to think about, well, what are they actually going to produce, and is there money out there that will help support that commodity? You know, that's really like, where are they going to get their funding from? You know, who's backing them? And if you've got solid shareholders and a solid debt, you know, helping them fund it, then you could say, oh, yeah, well, it looks like this one's going to get built. But what's happening with the M&A right now is that most of the M&A, you know, apart from Great Bear, I would say, has been mostly for operations. Like Pretium and Newcrest and that. Companies that acquire, they'd rather pay a premium on a producing asset that you don't have to permit, you don't have any risk of development, you don't have any other social license to operate issues because they're already operating. So they'd rather pay the premium on an operating asset. So the goal for a development company now should be to actually build it. And that should be what you want to do. Those people that want to show they're going to build to get taken out because they really don't have the capacity to build is the ones you want to avoid, because they might be forced to build, but they may not have any capacity to do it. And then they will be the ones that run into even more trouble because they don't know what they're doing. But still, they might get funded by, let's say, somebody who also doesn't know what they're doing. So those are definitely the ones you want to avoid. When you look at the development project, you look at the people behind it. What is their experience developing that kind of project in this kind of environment? And those people should get funded, because like we talked about before, there's not a lot of development projects out there. And if we're going to have, especially in base metals, a shortage of metals, then, you know, these projects need to get built.
Well, Joe, I'm glad you got into M&A activity there and whether developers should try to take the project forward on their own or wait to get taken over. We have seen a slew of takeover offers ever since the Kirkland Lake Agnico Eagle kind of kicked off the thing. We've seen a number of them, the Calibre Fiore deal, the Hochschild Amarillo deal, the Pretium takeover by Newcrest, which was a major one for the sector, and then the Great Bear takeover. All of those were single asset takeovers of a project that made sense. But my question is, do you think a lot of the mid-tiers in particular are looking at projects that they wanted to bolt on with a more skeptical lens now because of these cost inputs? And are they more likely to take over a project, you know, Great Bear aside, are they more likely to take over a project like a Pretium or like a Fiore that's already in production because they don't have that risk and that capital risk of and the construction risk? It's already behind them at that point. Do you think that's going to shape the kind of companies that are taken over?
Well, that's what we've been seeing up to this point for different reasons, because people didn't want to get involved in the development. They didn't want to get involved in the permitting risk and all that. They would rather just buy an operation. And we saw that in not only in gold, like you said, with Newcrest and Bruce Jack, Hochschild. Actually, they bought this thing in Amarillo, but that was actually development. But their problem was, you know, geopolitically, that there was the risk of their operations, like in Peru, like in Immaculada, I think, being shut down because of social license to operate. And so they were looking for some diversification geopolitically, and they chose this asset that they could build in Brazil. So each company will do what they need to do, handling geopolitical risk, which was Hochschild. Newcrest was expanding their footprint in British Columbia. Agnico and Kirkland expanding scale and to stay in low geopolitical risk jurisdictions. And the Chinese, let's not forget that one, with Golden Star in West Africa. And what was interesting that I saw with the base metals was I saw a lot of private equity that held the assets, selling them to producers. So we had that Matz selling it to Sandfire in Spain. We saw the Kambanga Nickel selling a stake of their project to BHP. You know, Sibanye bought a nickel and a copper project from Appian in Brazil. So you see some of these private equity companies that have been holding, you know, sort of lower margin projects in different price environments that are now selling, and producers are taking those over now because they want an operation and they wanted somebody to build it for them, somebody to operate it and get through all that, and now they'll take it over at a premium. And so that's happening in the private, or has happened in the private equity sector. And so are we going to see that happen with some of these public companies? It's harder to do in the public sector because investors have a probably a shorter term view of things than private equity. But private equity has done well over this last cycle, being able to hold on to assets when nobody wanted them, buying them low, and now selling them to producers that lack development projects that want operations.
All right, Joe, a lot of great comments here on the developers. And now trickling down into some of the juniors or explorers, what about the explorers? Because you do cover a lot of them. In the Exploration Insights letter, look, the Explorers, they've been under a fair bit of pressure right now, whether they have big drill programs or small drill programs. A lot of the Explorers seem to be getting sold off, and we are generally seeing the financing environment tighten here. What's your general strategy or outlook for a lot of the exploration and junior plays?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to continue to be tough, especially for the precious metals companies that don't have a significant access to capital. So all those people that might have, looked negatively at prospect generators or other companies that joint venture their projects and use other people's money, that might come back into vogue. Because they wouldn't have to go back to the capital markets as much as somebody who is trying to drive and advance a project 100% on their own. That was a great environment several years ago, up till probably Q3 last year. Now it's probably going to get harder to finance. So all those people that raised enough money to generate significant catalysts, that's all fine. But those people that didn't raise enough money for the next field season, and we're waiting to do that January, February this year, that's probably a little bit more problematic, depending if it's precious metals versus copper, nickel, and some of these other commodities that might see more people. Like last year, we saw a significant increase in financings, mostly driven by gold, mostly driven by people exploring for gold in Canada, Australia, and the U.S., we probably will see that diminish in 2022. But I don't know if that's going to be entirely offset, which I doubt, by financing of your copper projects, your nickel projects, your lithium projects, your what have you projects, which there are people interested in. But I don't think the investment demand is as high as for the gold and silver sector. So, because it doesn't translate usually, a lot of these people that are into gold and silver that suddenly turn around and start investing in nickel or something else.
Well, Joe, as far as the exploration budgets, some of these companies still are cashed up, and there seems to be two camps. There seems to be the more micro-cap explorers that maybe they've got a 5,000, maybe even a 10,000 meter program, and they seem to move wildly on these drill results because they are earlier stage. But we're also seeing these other companies doing 40,000, 60,000, 100,000, almost upwards of 200,000 meters of drilling in a year. And their share price doesn't really move much. Their market cap may grow, but their share price doesn't. And they're adding, you know, potentially far more resources in the ground, but they're also spending quite a bit more money. Which side of that equation are you more interested in? The small micro caps that could maybe make a discovery, or the larger companies building out and de-risking deposits that are growing?
Yeah, so different risk and reward. So it's not like I'm not interested in either. It's just, different. So when you're talking about the grassroots explorer with the 5,000 to 10,000 meter program, if I look at it and see geologically, oh, that's interesting, and they raised money, and so they have enough money to drill it. And so that's basically drill results. So if they do hit something, they can raise on the back of it. And that's what happened with HighGold. HighGold last year, they have a known resource at their JT deposit and that, and they were drilling infill holes there, which we're still seeing results from. Very impressive intersections, but it's sort of like known. And so, like you said, it doesn't really move the share price because people already thought that that's what they would get. But when they hit an intersection in a new prospect outside the known resources several kilometers away at Difficult Creek, the share price had a big surge, and then they raised money on the back of it. And they raised enough money that probably fund them for another 2 years of drilling up in Alaska, which is not cheap. So that's what still drives the retail sector, still drives a lot of what's happening is actual results. That'll continue to be a positive. But let's say somebody else does a similar program, drills, they get no results. So now they've spent their money, they've drilled that 5,000 meters, no significant results, they're trading at the same level or less, and now they have to go back to the market. So then the market's saying, well, what do you need? Well, we need another 5,000 meters to do the same thing. And then they're going, well, your first results weren't great. I don't really want to give you money to do that. You got anything else? And then if you're in that situation and you bought shares, the problem with these juniors is the liquidity starts drying up, and then it's harder to get out. It's a bit of a bear trap. Whereas maybe with a bigger company that might have a market cap of more, 200 plus million, that could raise more capital and drill more meters and, you know, advance the project, that might be less of a reward in terms of share price increase, but downside risk is less and there's less liquidity risk. So if you do sell, you can sell, whereas that might not be possible with some of these smaller companies. And then that's the sort of problem that you'll have, especially with precious metal juniors into 2022, where the sentiment is more negative.
All right, Joe, we're not going to take up any more of your time, but boy, oh boy, do we appreciate you taking this time with us and really diving into some of these production, development, and then even down into the junior plays. Look, I'm sure we all wish that this was just a raging bull market and everything was moving higher, but fact of the matter is there is still opportunity in the sector. You just need to be selective and you need a little bit of luck as well. But understanding, especially from the top down, the majors, developers, what they're going through, because that does trickle down into the juniors as well, plus the whole investment environment right now. Joe, really appreciate your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for listening. Again, please go through our website throughout the week. We had another busy week full of analysis and a lot of company updates. You can always reach out to us, fleck@kereport.com or chat@kereport.com. We love hearing from each and every one of you. Joe, everyone else, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Thanks very much, guys.